Blessings, everybody. This is Dale. Thank you so much for joining with me today on the Word Podcast. We're continuing our examination of Elijah. And remember why we're looking at Elijah in the book of James. At the end of it, James used Elijah as an example for one who prayed in faith and that magnificent things happened. And he described James as a man like us, okay? A man like us. The scripture we're looking at now are the ones that are in the New Testament, and we're basically winding down here. We're seeing places where Elijah is mentioned by name, but don't think that there's not things revealed here about Elijah or things revealed to us that give us more insight into the scripture. As a matter of fact, this is a great example in the next passage we're about to go to, and it's in Matthew. Matthew chapter 27, verse 45. Let me read the first verse and see if you can discern what the context is. Now, from the sixth hour, darkness fell upon all the land until the ninth hour. Yeah, you know what that is. This is when Jesus is on the cross. He's being crucified. He's being sacrificed for the sins of mankind. And so at the sixth hour, this would have been noon. This is going by Roman reckoning at the time, I guess. I mean, Jewish reckoning. And so the sixth hour, it becomes dark, and the darkness lasted upon the land until the ninth hour, until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, whether that darkness, if you watch the Passion of the Christ, that great movie, they interpret that darkness as clouds rolling and it becomes very, very dark. Well, that could well be what it is. It could also be that the sun, moon, and stars just went dark, okay, that the sun went dark. It could totally be that. So in verse 46, we read this. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which being translated is this, my God, why have you forsaken me? And we're not going to get into the detail of what Jesus was saying there. He knew why God had forsaken him. He knew why he was on the cross. But he was in such agony because for the first time ever in all of existence, and that's the interesting thing of Father, Son, and Spirit, they've always existed. He was separated from the Father, and he was carrying the sins of the world. And talk about the ultimate feeling of being forsaken. Well, he's crying out to God. Verse 47 says, and some of those who were standing there, when they heard it, began saying, this man is calling for Elijah. He's calling for Elijah. So that's where we have mention of the name of the personage of Elijah again. But watch what happens. Verse 48. Immediately, one of them ran, and taking a sponge, he filled it with sour wine and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. And there are a couple things going on right here. You actually see some compassion on the part of some people gathered around there, okay, even among the soldiers. And so they dipped the sponge in this sour wine and put it on the reed. Partly to assuage the thirst, yes, but also to help alleviate some of the pain. Okay, because they hear him crying out, and they think he's crying out to the prophet Elijah. Then verse 49, but the rest of them, so you have some of them right here who are gathered around saying this, that he's calling out for Elijah. Somebody goes to help him to make him feel a little better, but the rest of them said this, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. So you see Elijah mentioned twice here. They don't seem to be shocked that he's calling out to Elijah. I think it actually gives us some little insight into the mindset of Judaism at this time in relationship to how they viewed Elijah. So now the snarky ones will say, okay, let's see whether Elijah's going to come to save him. It's not whether Elijah could come and save him, or whether he should or has the power, or whether Elijah's alive or not. They're saying, let's see if he will. Okay, they were fully anticipating Elijah to come before the great and terrible day of the Lord. Remember what we saw in the previous episodes. Jesus actually told his disciples, if you believe that I am who I say that I am, then John was Elijah for you. But I'm telling you that Elijah will come. He will come. So there was this understanding that Elijah is going to come. And they were sitting there saying, hey, let's see if Elijah is actually going to come. Well, the Lord wasn't crying out for Elijah. He was saying, my God, he was crying unto the Father. But they had no mindset of this crying unto the Father in that way. They did have the mindset when they hear that Eli, Eli, they're thinking Elijah. The next verse, verse 50, says this: "And Jesus cried out with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit." So let me just read the next few verses to just finish the account right here, because this is such a powerful, powerful thing. And actually, at the time that I'm doing this podcast, it's near a time that we give special emphasis and attention to the resurrection, Easter time, which is really a pagan holiday. We'll talk about that some other time. But it's Easter 2019, right around that time of year. So it's a good time to reflect upon this. Jesus cries out with a loud voice, and he yielded up his spirit. Nobody killed Jesus from the perspective of removing life from him without his permission. He allowed it to happen. He allowed himself to be crucified. And at the point in time when it was all said and done, when he cried out, "It is finished," to tetelestai, when he cried that out and it was all completed and it was finished and everything was, we were actually studying this in Hebrews this last week, when it was perfected, when he was perfected, when he was completed in what he came to do, when that occurred, then he yielded up his spirit. He did it. And by yielding up his spirit, he gave himself as a sacrifice. Now, there's some things that logistically took place. Now, you hardly ever hear a couple of these priests on. One of them you do, and maybe the other one. But boy, one I've never heard a message or a teaching on. Here's one you'll hear every now and then, the next verse. "And behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split." The veil, which was very, very thick veil, very heavy veil, very tall, absolutely impossible for man to cut it and to tear it in two, was torn from top to bottom. The Lord did that. Why did he do it? Because when it was torn from top to bottom, that veil, the priests that were in there going about their priestly duties could look in there and see into the Holy of Holies. They could see into everything. They could see that it was empty. There was no ark. There was no Ark of the Covenant. There hadn't been in one since the Babylonian exile. It revealed the emptiness of their religion. "And the earth shook, and the rock split." There was a massive earthquake, and the rock split. Here's one I've never heard anybody preach on. Verse 52, "The tombs were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised." And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. So apparently, around the cemeteries around Jerusalem or whatever, the tombs were opened up. And after Jesus was resurrected, the saints of old, those who believed in the coming Messiah, were resurrected. And they came into the holy city and appeared to many. They walked about and spoke and appeared to many people. What is that all about? Is that not amazing? And then this last verse for today, because our time's running out, which you have heard many teachings upon, verse 54. "Now the centurion and those who were keeping guard over Jesus with him, when they saw the earthquake and the things that were happening, became very frightened, and they said this, 'Truly, this was the Son of God.'" You know, the Lord testified of himself many, many, many ways. Even the centurions and those who were with him realized this was the Son of God because of what they've seen. When the veil was torn from the top to the bottom, in subsequent portions of Scripture over in Acts, it is mentioned that not a small number of the priests believed. That means a lot of them believed because of what they saw there and what happened. And then when you see here in the city of Jerusalem that the tombs were open and the bodies of the saints who were falling asleep were raised, and coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered into the holy city and appeared to many. My goodness, what a testimony. Anyway, Elijah was a part of this because of the mindset, because of the Lord crying out and what was being said there. Reread that before you go to sleep tonight and see what the Lord speaks to you, okay? Again, I'm Dale. I'll see you again next time. Goodbye.